tackling tough topics to help you think reasonably about life's most important issues. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am your host. This is the sixth episode of our season entitled The Simple-Minded Society. I hope you found it somewhat beneficial and somewhat helpful so far. Today, we're going to be talking about contemporary censorship, coercion, and discrimination. Though I'm an ecumenical theologian, a Christian who desires unity in the church under the authority of Christ, I grew up in a particular Protestant denomination. In some ways, I always felt like an outsider. Not necessarily because of anything bad going on, but just because personality-wise, I simply wasn't a great fit. At the same time, there were leaders and people in these churches that greatly shaped me and influenced me in a really positive way. People, true saints, who I will always be indebted to. After community college, I ended up attending a private university that was associated with the denomination that I grew up in. Honestly, I felt much more like an outsider there than I ever did back home in the church that I attended when I was younger. Luckily, I had a couple really great professors who mentored me and made my experience worthwhile, even though in a lot of ways, I was like a fish out of water during my time there. To this day, I still have relationships with these professors, one of whom actually officiated my wedding. But these feelings of being an outsider, always feeling like I was on the outside looking in, grew even stronger once I was told that I couldn't receive credentials with my denomination. It didn't really bother me all that much, to be totally honest, but I know some of my friends and former mentors weren't all that happy about our denomination's position on the matter. When Chad, the original founder of this podcast, and I were in the midst of developing our long-term plan and strategy for Thinker Sensitive, I was informed that I wasn't allowed to record podcasts with Chad, and he wasn't allowed to record podcasts with me. Chad was working at a particular church in the denomination at the time, and someone in leadership, whether in the church he was working at or in the district, told him that he couldn't record with me. The reasoning that was relayed to me was that I was, quote, too liberal, end quote. This opinion came from people who didn't even know me, who knew nothing about me, my life, and my history. Generally speaking, this is an example of censorship, coercion, and discrimination. It might even be an example of slander, as the accusation directed against me undermined my ability to do business and run my podcast as a form of making a living. After this experience, I vowed to never allow anyone to censor me and prevent me from doing what I feel called to do and saying what I feel called to say. This is one of many reasons why I have such a high value for free thinking and free speech. Before we get into this issue, I think it's important to define our terms. Censorship is the suppression or prohibition of ideas and actions that are understood as politically or culturally inappropriate or unacceptable. Coercion is the practice of persuading someone to do something by using force or threats or incentives. Discrimination is the unjust or prejudicial treatment of different categories of people or things. And bias is prejudice in favor of or against one thing, person, or group compared with another, usually in a way considered to be unfair. There are also some really key distinctions and standards that we need to establish here as well. The first would be the distinction between the legal dimension and the ethical dimension. So there's censorship that is legally permissible, but it may not be ethically permissible, depending on one's interpretation. There's also the distinction between hate speech and free speech. At Thinker Sensitive, we affirm the legality of free speech, but ethically oppose certain expressions of it, like hate speech, for instance. But what exactly is hate speech? Part of the problem is there's no unequivocal, objective, legal definition. Broadly speaking, hate speech is not illegal, though particular forms or applications of it may be judged as illegal. Here are my personal and subjective parameters. Hate speech can be defined as derogatory and direct ad hominem attacks against another person based on one's identity. Now, if hate speech isn't illegal, at least on a very broad and general level, then what kind of speech is? Let's look at the legal exceptions to the First Amendment. The first exception is obscenity. Obscenity is concerned with prohibiting lewd, filthy, or disgusting words or pictures. Now, there's great disagreement on how to apply this law or this standard, and it's enforced more on the state level than it is on the federal level. Fraud is another exception to the First Amendment. Fraud is the use of intentional deception for monetary or personal gain. A threat of imminent violence, incitement of lawless action, or speech integral to already criminal conduct are also exceptions to the First Amendment. And finally, defamation is another exception to the First Amendment. There are two forms of defamation. One is libel, which is a written form of defamation, and the other is slander, which is a spoken form of defamation. So we have a basic understanding of what kind of speech is legal and what kind of speech is not. But what am I talking about when I refer to the ethical dimension or the ethical category? What is ethically permissible and what is not ethically permissible? This is a very subjective question. And so my answer is naturally going to be a subjective one. A personal opinion. The ethical standards that I'm working with in this context, the criteria that I'm using to judge what is ethical and what is not, are things like tolerance, diversity, inclusivism, openness, consistency, impartiality, fairness, reciprocity, freedom, charitableness, respect, and consideration, all within reason. I believe that free speech should be the general rule, with few exceptions. Free speech should be widely applied, not widely limited, and without discrimination with regards to ideology. There should be a general rule of universality, instead of particularity and selectivity based on worldview or belief system. Our focus should mainly be on the rule, not on the few exceptions, though context and setting certainly matter here. I believe that free thinking and free speech are basic human rights that by and large should be protected by governments and political systems. I think that protecting free speech is an ethical and moral issue, and one that we all should be concerned about because it affects us all. My main ethical exception to free speech, which overlaps with the legal exceptions to the First Amendment, would be lawless, hateful, violent forms of extremism or radicalism. I think that there should be natural limits to the ethical values of tolerance, diversity, and inclusivism based on the criterion of immoral extremism and radicalism. In other words, even though I really value tolerance and see it as a general rule, there should be some exceptions to it, but only in extreme cases. Now, the problem is that different people have radically different views on what radicalism is. These views are subjective and relative to the individual interpreter, and they are often highly influenced by personal bias and partisanship. A conservative, for example, may not view the Proud Boys as an extremist group, but they may very well view Antifa members as extremists, and vice versa. Our personal biases drive our interpretations. As I just mentioned, a lot of these decisions also come down to context and setting. What is ethically permissible in one setting may not be ethically permissible in another setting. Once again, context matters, and I think we need to learn to become contextual thinkers. The distinction between a private and public setting is particularly relevant to this discussion, for example. Stating something controversial might be ethically permissible in the company of close friends, but stating something controversial might not be ethically permissible in the company of your colleagues during a meeting at work. With this in mind, let me give a contextual and dialectical appropriation of some of these values. An example of how these values work together and how they're worked out within the context of free speech. In my opinion, anti-religious bigotry should be tolerated online and in various forms of media, but not necessarily in the context of friendship. In appropriate contexts, people should have the right to denounce religion and scrutinize religious people, even if it's derogatory and pejorative in nature. Here you see my values of tolerance, free thinking, and free speech. On the other hand, as a religious person, I'm probably not going to be friends with someone who consistently berates my religious identity in a mean-spirited manner, making me feel uncomfortable and unsafe. Here you see my values of context, diversity, inclusivism, charitableness, respect, and consideration. When thinking about free speech from both a legal and ethical perspective, our focus should be on the rule, not the exceptions to the rule, which are the legal exceptions to the First Amendment and other forms of extremism or radicalism. Most of what will be stated from this point forward is in the context of the rule, the natural human right of free speech for all. Speaking of rules, let's talk for a second about the golden rule, the idea of treating others the way that you would want to be treated. The golden rule should always be applied in this context. So, for instance, if I don't want to be censored, then I shouldn't censor others. If I don't want to be coerced, then I shouldn't coerce others. If I don't want to be discriminated against, then I shouldn't discriminate against others. If I were to summarize my position on these things, I would call it a Christian form of classical liberalism. The values of free thinking and free speech combined with Christian love. Now that we've established our key distinctions and standards, let's take a look at some concrete forms of censorship in our society today. Forms of censorship in a few different contexts. The first form of censorship that I have here is legislative censorship. All laws naturally censor certain actions and naturally coerce people to follow those laws. As demonstrated in both federal and state laws, not all coercion and censorship is bad. Again, context matters. Laws against murder, for instance, censor and coerce. This is a form of governmental censorship and coercion. But again, it's not necessarily bad. The ethical determination, the judgment as to whether the law in question is ethically permissible or not, is going to depend on what law or piece of legislation we're talking about, and our subjective interpretation of this law or piece of legislation. The second form of censorship that I have listed is corporate censorship. For the most part, private companies can legally censor what they want. So the ethical question is our main concern here. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Google, Instagram, and many other companies censor, coerce, and discriminate through a variety of different means. There is often a selectiveness in these determinations, which reveals bias and prejudice. Let me give some examples. Algorithmic bias, banning, blocking, and blacklisting people. Demonetizing content and flagging content. Big tech companies participate in all of these things on a regular basis. Companies in general tend to only market a particular cultural or political narrative while censoring alternative narratives. This is often driven by the pursuit of status, power, and money. If you don't believe me, I would ask you this. How many CEOs, how many wealthy old white men really care and are really concerned about the political trends and cultural mores that they market through their ads? Is this done out of a real sense of moral obligation or self-interest and personal gain? The concerning part is that most people 40 years and under are primarily educated and develop their worldviews and ideologies through many of these companies, tech companies, media corporations, social media networks. This can be a form, however subtle, implicit, and even unintentional, of indoctrination. It can certainly be understood as an expression of various forms of censorship, coercion, and discrimination. The last form of censorship that I have here is what I call social censorship, a censorship that takes place in various subgroups, whether online or in person. It involves groupthink and a kind of herd mentality. It results in a censorship through coercion. Unfortunately, social groups are often homogeneous and exclusive. They sometimes become this way because over time, difference is progressively censored and discriminated against and ultimately ostracized. A social group can become a subculture of insults, mockery, pejorative comments, presumptuousness, prejudice, shaming, generalizations, and labels, which naturally censor and coerce and drive away any semblance of divergence. Political groups on Facebook might serve as a good example. I'm sure there are a bunch of subreddits also like this, though I don't usually go on Reddit. I have definitely experienced this kind of thing on different online forums, blogs, and websites. Many times it can be very subtle, implicit, and unobvious to the people participating in it. But those who directly experience the discrimination know it to be real. In my subjective opinion, censorship on both the corporate and social levels is often done in the name of tolerance, inclusivism, diversity, and coexistence. And yet far too often, the censorship in question directly opposes these values, and therefore it becomes unethical. The irony is that many who are against discrimination, prejudice, generalizations, and stereotypes promote these very things. I see this again and again in our society and on social media. There is a great deal of conflict, inconsistency, contradiction, and hypocrisy on this issue. The implications are vast. You have suppression. You have a lack of openness. You have a lack of dialogue and discourse. Basic, even innocent difference in opinion and viewpoint becomes taboo or scandalous. You have different forms of indoctrination. Divergence is demonized. You have a loss of free speech, free practice, and free thinking. With that said, and let me be very clear on this, I think all contemporary American comparisons to historical totalitarian regimes and autocratic dictatorships are over the top. To compare the current cultural and political landscape in the U.S. to Nazi-led Germany is an exaggeration and a form of extremist rhetoric that should be discouraged, but not censored, or banned, or blacklisted, or canceled. You see the difference? Before I get to my conclusion, we probably need to hit the issue of disinformation here. I'm going to keep this really brief. Disinformation is a big problem in the social media age. The mass dissemination of it is a big problem. The big question to me is this: does it fall under one of the exceptions to the First Amendment, or is it a form of violent extremism or radicalism? In the context of a private company or a public agency, you'll ask the question whether it's a form of hate speech as well. If not, let it be. If so, censor it. My personal stance on the matter is this. In general, in a free democracy, disinformation should be criticized, corrected, and countered by the people, by the responsible citizens of a democracy, not censored, banned, and blacklisted by private or public agencies. You may ask the question, but what happens when we live in a society where the masses are simple-minded and are unable to scrutinize disinformation? My answer is this: either take personal responsibility and speak up and take action in your society, or become a citizen of a different democracy that is more representative of your values. I want to close out this podcast with some personal recommendations and correctives. I'd like to see marketing and advertising that doesn't reflect blatant partisanship. I'd like to see products advertised, not ideologies advertised. I'd like to see a real marketplace of ideas, where everyone is invited to the table in a free democracy. I'd like to see the free exchange of ideas. And I'd like to see the golden rule followed more often. For example, if I don't want my opinions, ideas, worldview, belief system, and lifestyle censored and discriminated against in my society, then I shouldn't be so quick to censor and discriminate against others. I was watching a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode last night, and Larry David talks about how he wants free speech for himself, but not for anyone else. And if anyone has anything to say, or anything that they want to say, it should run through Larry. That's kind of the mentality that I see in our society today. We need to realize that offense often strikes both ways. This is so, so important to recognize. Let me give some examples. The claims of Christianity can offend non-Christians, but the claims of non-Christians can also offend Christians. The claims of Hinduism can offend Muslims, but the claims of Muslims can also offend proponents of Hinduism. The claims of conservatives offend liberals. The claims of liberals offend conservatives. Should we censor everything that is offensive? If we do, would there be anything left of worth and meaning and creativity and substance? Wouldn't we just be left with a bunch of basic propositions, like 1 plus 1 equals 2, or like the sky is blue? But wait, what about people who are colorblind? What about those who confuse greens and blues? We can't say that. Most personal and subjective beliefs are offensive in some way, to someone, and somewhere. We should be very cautious about censoring things simply because they're offensive. And we need to recognize that offense is often two-sided. I'd like to see respectful, empathetic, civil discourse. I'd like to see charitable interpretations. I'd like to see true tolerance, true diversity, true inclusivism, and true coexistence. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available at thinkersensitive.com, iTunes, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content and wish to donate to help us grow our online community of thinkers, please visit thinkersensitive.com.